Good morning. So today's daf is Kuf Yud Ches. We are beginning 118. We are beginning at the Mishnah on the bottom of Kuf Yud Zayin. Perfect. All right. So we'll say so Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Beis in the Mishnah. Still same general motif of cases as we've been dealing with until now. Achas omeres meisva, achas omeres lo meis. This is an interesting case. Let's say you have co-wives, two women. They come back, they go overseas with their husband, and once one wife says he died, one wife says he didn't die. Zush omeres meis, tinase v'titol ksuvasa. The one who said that he died is permitted to get remarried, and she takes her ksuva, as he said on yesterday's daf. V'zush omeres lo meis, and the one who says that he did not die, lo tinase v'lo titol ksuvasa. She may not remarry, nor may she get her ksuva. Okay, so the Gemara says the following: Achas omeres meis, v'achas omeres neherag. If one woman says that, this is interesting. Both agree that the husband's dead, but they disagree as to how. So one says that he died. He just died. He died of natural causes. The other one says no, neherag. He was killed. So Rabbi Meir Omer Meir says hoyel umachishos zu ezu. Since their testimony contradicts one another, hare elu lo yinasu. Neither may remarry. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon Omrim, Hoyo Vizu Vizu Modos Shein Kayim. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon say, even though they disagree about how he died, both agree that what? That at this point in time he is dead, Yinasu, therefore they may remarry. Eid Omer Meis, so we'll see in the Gemara, why Rabbi Meir doesn't comment on the first case in the Mishnah. Because Rabbi Meir seems to say that any time that co-wives contradict each other, so essentially they cancel out each other's testimony. Yet, in the first case, where one is saying that he died, one is saying he did not die, Rabbi Meir is silent. So we'll see that. We'll see in the Gemara why that is. Next, last line on Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Beis. Eid Omer Meis, ve'eid Omer Lo Meis. If one witness said the husband died, one witness said the husband did not die. And I both say, in this case, eid over here in this context, unqualified, means an eid echad, a man. A man, an eid echad who's a man, a singular witness who's a man says, one says the husband died, one says the husband didn't die, top of Kuf Yud Ches. Or, isha omeres meis v'isha omeres lo meis, or a woman comes along and gives testimony. Two women. One woman says that he died. One woman says that he did not die. So what is the halacha? Hare zu lo tinase. This woman may not remarry. Rashi says, Har isha amra meis, isha amra lo meis, hare zu lo tinase. Hoyel ubasa shnia kodim shiatiruha. Apirushan abose. Now in this case over here, remember, this doesn't contradict what we learned yesterday. Because in this case over here, the second witness is coming before Beis Din handed down the psak to allow her to remarry. So because the psak of the Beis was not yet handed down, therefore again, asorta. So we'll see, Rashi is going to point out how the Gemara is going to establish this. So the Mishnah is saying over here that in this case, even though normally we believe in Eid Echad, when the Eid Echad comes along and says your husband died, in this case over here, because the second Eid is coming before the Beis Din handed down its ruling, therefore halacha lemaisa, we will not allow the woman to remarry. Says the Gemara, Taima de Amra Lomes, Ha Ishtika Tinase. So we'll say, going back to the first case in the Mishnah. First case in the Mishnah was two co-wives go overseas with their husband. They come back. One wife says he's dead. We'll call her wife A says he's dead. Wife B says he's not. So in that case, so what did the Mishnah say? The Mishnah said that she may not, the one who said that he did not die, may not remarry. Okay, which makes sense. Each wife is believed to establish her own status. Therefore, again, when wife number two says, listen, he's still alive, he did not die, therefore she's not permitted to remarry. So the Gemara says the reason she's not permitted to remarry is because she said he's not dead. What we can infer from that is what? That if she was silent, let's say wife A, wife number one, says he died, and wife number two says nothing. So the Mishnah says it, the Gemara says it would appear that if wife number two was silent, that she would become permitted to remarry based on the testimony of wife number one. But how could that be? Ha'in tsara mi'ida lechaverta. We've already established that what? Well, this is yesterday's daf. That's one of the women that is disqualified to give testimony about the fact of whether or not a man died is who? is the co-wife of a woman. She is not believed. So how could it be that the co-wife in this context would be a believed through her own testimony to allow the remarriage of wife number two? To which the Gemara says, to which the Ohayans are, lo meis itzrichale. No, the truth is, the Mishnah is coming to teach us the case of where wife number two explicitly says, husband did not die. I will say, well, listen to this. So, Sagadait Chamina, I would have thought, Hamais, I would have thought the following. In case number one, in first case of the Mishnah, where you have two women coming back, co-wives, wife number one says husband died, wife number two says husband did not die. I would assume, says the Gemara, that the halacha would say that we believe the wife who says that he died. We believe the wife who says that he died. But why is the other wife then saying that he didn't die? V'hadika amra lo meis l'kilkula l'tzarehu d'nechavna. So we'll say, what is wife number two saying when she comes along and she says he didn't die? She's trying to mess up wife number one. This goes back to what we learned yesterday, that there are certain negative dynamics that exist. One of those negative dynamics is between co-wives. So I might have thought that wife number two is saying that he did not die in order to mess up wife number one and prevent her from getting remarried. If she does that, who else is she messing up? She's also messing up herself. I want to listen to this. V'tamos nafsha implishtim ka'amra. And I both say this is an expression. So this is taken by Shimshon, right? You remember again, Shimshon in his last act. Remember, Shimshon is taken captive by the plishtim. And he asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu for one last burst of strength in order to go ahead and push down the columns in the Philistine Colosseum to kill all the Plishtim and, of course, lose his life in the process. So he says, Tamos nafshi mos yisharim in Plishtim. Let my soul die. All right, Tamos nafshi in Plishtim. I'm ready to go down with the Plishtim. So the Gemara uses this as an expression that sometimes people want to see something happen so badly that they're willing to go down with the ship. So maybe this co-wife is ready to give it to wife number two, wife B, is ready to give it to wife A in such a significant way that what? Even if it means that she goes down with the ship, she's willing to go ahead and give it to wife number one. Kamash malon, that although there may be animosity, there's not that much animosity. And therefore, halacha lemaisa, in the case of the Mishnah, where wife number one says he died, wife number two says he did not die, we do not assume that wife number two is lying in an effort to go ahead and give it to wife number one. Rather, we assume that they just have conflicting testimony. Therefore, each woman's reality will be defined by what they say to the Beis Din. Achas omeres meis. So remember again, in case number two in the Mishnah, they both say, I just want to also point out, remember, Tamos nafshi in plishtim, it's not always a good thing, right? By Shimshon, it was very noble. Also, Thomas Nafshi and Plishtim also means sometimes people become so vested in something that they lose absolutely all objectivity with it, and they're willing to go down with the ship when they really should not be going down with the ship. So sometimes it's noble, and sometimes it's exceptionally self-destructive. So the Gemara goes weiter. So Achas Omer Esbeis, remember again, in the next case of the Mishnah, was one woman says the husband died, and one woman says the husband was killed, right? So remember, again, there the Mishnah records a machlokus between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Meir says, well, since they're contradicting one another, their testimony cancels each other out. And Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Shimon say, no, they might disagree about the mechanics, but they agree on what? On the bottom line, that he's dead. So the Gemara says, v'lif l'gar Meir b'reisha, why doesn't Rabbi Meir argue in the first case of the Mishnah? Because we must remember, the first case is even more dramatic, because what was the first case of the Mishnah? One wife is saying he's dead, and one wife is saying he's what? But he's alive, right? And yet, again, the Mishnah doesn't record that. Now, if Rabbi Meir is going to say that when one says he's dead and one says he was killed, that they cancel each other out, then what? Then certainly in a case of where one says he's dead and one said he's alive, they certainly should cancel each other out. Why doesn't the Mishnah record the opinion of Rabbi Meir in the first case in the Mishnah? Amar Rabbi Elazar, Machlokes Shnuya. The truth is, the whole Mishnah is a Machlokes. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon. And the truth is, the first case in the Mishnah reflects the view of Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon. Because Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon would hold that in a case even where they deliver conflicting testimony, each woman is believed to go ahead and decide or essentially create the reality for her own status. Rabbi Yochanan says, I feel Rabbi Meir. The truth is, it could even, first case of the Mishnah could even be Rabbi Meir. How so? Baha, I feel Rabbi Meir moda. Because in the first case, if Rabbi Meir would agree, dechol lo meis be'edos isha, lav hachashir. This is actually very interesting. That Rabbi Meir would say that in any situation where a woman says that my husband did not die, that does not shter, that does not undermine the testimony given by the other husband, by the other wife, that my husband did die. Look at Rashi. Lo meis lav hachashir, dirabanan heiminuha lekama. Because the say, we understand that this whole idea of the rabbis believing the Eid Echad, and especially the rabbis believing in Eid Echad who's a woman, and not only that, especially the rabbis believing in Eid Echad who's a woman, who's the wife herself. The both say, in general, when it comes to testimony, the one thing that will generally go ahead and disqualify you from testimony off the bat is what? Is if, not even the Eid Echad, that's even secondary. First is, if you have a self-serving interest in your testimony. That's the first thing that Beis Din will always look for. Are you an independent party giving this testimony? Or are you somehow vested in this testimony? Here you have a wife who's coming, giving. So essentially what Rabbi Meir says, look, is this whole thing is a chiddush. Therefore, again, when a woman comes to Beis Din, assuming that we vet her in all the ways that the previous Mishnah has discussed, when she says, my husband died, she's believed. And even if a co-wife comes along afterward and says, my husband did not die, that subsequent testimony does not undermine the testimony of the first. Now, of course, the incredible novelty will be, you have two women married to the same man who have two different statuses. Right, wife number one is free to remarry and get her ksuva, and wife number two is still considered to be a married woman. But says Rabbi Meir, that's the mechanics, that's the construct that the rabbis created. Therefore, the fact that the second wife comes along and says he's not dead is not a hachasha. Tanan, we have a mission that teaches us, eid omer meis ve'eid omer lo meis. One witness says the husband died, and one witness says the husband did not die. Isha omeres meis ve'isha omeres lo meis. Or one wife says, right? One wife says he died, one wife says he did not die. Hare ze lo tinase. Such a woman should not remarry. Bishlama le Rabbi Elazar, stomach Rabbi Meir. El Rabbi Yochanan Kasha. So we'll say, this Mishnah makes perfect sense according to Rabbi Elazar. Why? Because Rabbi Elazar will hold that a Stam Mishnah reflects the of Rabbi Meir. And above, remember, we already had Rabbi Meir recorded in the Mishnah saying what? Whenever you have conflicting testimony, what happens? They cancel each other out. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, who said that even Rabbi Meir will agree that in a case of where a woman says, my husband did not die, that's not a hachasha, that's not a contradiction to the first. This Mishnah will pose a kasha, to which the Gemara says, Inachinami, you're right, kasha. It is absolutely a question. So I will say, just so you should know, halacha lamaisa, the way we paskin like this is not like Rabbi Meir in both of these cases. Therefore, in the case of the two wives who showed up, one says mace, one says lo mace, we paskin like the first case in the Mishnah, namely, again, that the one who said mace is permitted to remarry and get her ksuva, the one who said lo mace is not permitted to remarry and get her ksuva. In the second case of the Mishnah, where one says he was killed, one says he's dead, one says he died, one says he was killed, so we don't pass the Rabbi Meir, we permit them both to get remarried, because we accept the approach of Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Shimon, that Lamaisa, they agreed on the fact that he's dead. Okay. So the Gemara goes weiter. However, again, one important qualification, we do accept the last qualification of the Mishnah, which is that if let's say Eid Echad shows up and says, husband died, and then Eid Sheni shows up and says that he did not die, he's alive, if she did not yet remarry, then what? Then we will not allow her to remarry in that case because the testimonies cancel each other out. Obviously, if she already remarried after first testimony, that goes back to yesterday's Mishnah where we established that Lamaisa, she need not leave the second marriage. Mishnah, Ha'isha Shahalchi Obala Lamedina Sayam. So another interesting case. A woman goes overseas with her, everything happens on vacation. It's amazing. So the Isha, right? So the woman goes overseas with her husband, and what happens? Uba'ava Amra Mace Bali. She comes back from vacation, right? And she says, My husband died while we were away. So what's Talochatina say? So based on her testimony, she can get remarried. And Rabbi say, obviously, The Mishnah is not restating all of the qualifications that we've already established. I mean, remember again, it has to be shalom in their marriage, and it has to be shalom in the particular region in which they were living. And based on the Gemara, there can't be famine, and there can't be pestilence, and there can't be any of the other plagues. You know, there can't be anything else that's happening. So the Mishnah is not restating those qualifications because they're understood. So a woman comes back from Dina Sam, she says her husband died. So she's able to get remarried, and she's able to get her ksuva. However, vitsarasa asura. But remember, again, her co-wife is asur, which Rabbi said we've also already established. That's obvious. Why? Because the Maaser, remember, one wife can't give is not believed to give testimony about the death of a husband for a second wife. So when this woman comes back, she's believed vis-a-vis herself, but she does not permit her co-wife. Therefore, Haisa Bas Yisrael a Kohen. Therefore, I will say if the co-wife was a Bas Yisrael to a Kohen, meaning if the co-wife was the daughter of a Yisrael, but the husband, whom wife number one testified now is dead, and that testimony is enough to release wife number one from the marriage and give her a ksuva, but wife number two is not released, so technically speaking, she's still married to the Kohen, to her husband the Kohen, so therefore, Tocha B'Truma, Dere Tarfon. Therefore again, so look, it's quite obvious, if she's not released from her marriage, and she's married to a Kohen, she can continue to eat Truma according to Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Akiva says, no, Ein zu derech motzi asum de'avera. No, this is not a good approach, because this approach essentially does not leverage her risk. It does not allow her to avoid being over an avera. Why? Because Rabbi Akiva says like this. Rabbi Akiva essentially says that as much as we can't accept the testimony of wife number one to free the tzara from the marriage, or as much as we've already accept that, but at the same time, Akiva says what? You can't totally ignore the fact that wife number one just came back and testified and said, our husband is dead. It's true, it won't release wife number two, it won't release the co-wife from the marriage, it won't allow her to collect the ksuva, but you also can't ignore it. Therefore, Rabbi Akiva says, Achete asrili nasei, v'asura mile'echo b'truma. Therefore, Rabbi Akiva says, although wife number two, the tzara wife, is not permitted to get remarried, because the testimony of wife number one does not work for wife number two, however, she may not eat truma. She may not continue to eat truma. Why not? Because Rabbi Akiva says, we have to be choshish for the possibility that the husband really is dead, and therefore she may not eat truma. Amra meis ba'ali, v'acharkach meis chami. So we'll say another case. Woman comes back from overseas, and she says, I was overseas with my husband and my father-in-law, and my husband died, and then my father-in-law died. So what's talocha? Tinase. She can get remarried. V'titol ksuvas, and she gets her ksuva. V'chamosa asura. But her mother-in-law, of course, cannot get remarried. Both says, based on what we learned yesterday, because the testimony of a daughter-in-law is not enough to allow a mother-in-law to remarry. Fine. Therefore, if the mother-in-law was married to a man who's a Kohen, meaning the father-in-law was a Kohen, Haisa Bas Yisrael a Kohen, therefore, again, she can. Rabbi Tarfon says, okay, well, if she's still married, it means she can continue to eat Truma. On the other hand, Rabbi Akiva, we know, Ein zo derech motzia mi de'avera, achete asura linasei, v'asura mi le'echo b'truma. Rabbi Akiva, on the other hand, argues, and he says, no, that does not work. That does not work. Why? Because again, this approach will not go ahead and save her from committing an avera. Therefore, even though she cannot remarry, she also what? She also can't eat truma. Out of a concern that maybe the testimony given by wife number one is in fact accurate, her husband's dead, in which case she can't continue to eat truma. So now the Gemara wonders, Utsricha. Now it appears that we have two cases that say the same exact thing. So again, remember, case number one was with the co-wives, case number two was with a daughter-in-law and a mother-in-law. But the principle is the same, right? We believe the first woman, and let's say again, the supposed or the deceased husband is a Kohen. Rabbi Tarfon says, okay, so Rabbi Tarfon says, if we're not going to believe the testimony of wife number one, for wife number two, she could continue to eat Truma. Rabbi Akiva says, no, she can't. So why do I need to state the same case twice? Utsricha, di'i itmar hach kamaisa, because if it would have just said the first case by the co-wives, b'hakam Rabbi Tarfon, mishum d'tza'ara d'gufa. I would have thought that in that case, we have to be concerned that maybe what? That's the case where wife number one would want to lie about the fate of the husband in order to really do something negative to wife number two, because wife number two actually really deprives her. Wife number two adversely affects her physically. This Sara de Gufa, how so Rashi says, Sara de Gufa, Tashmish mona asla mi baila, havadai mishakra kedei lekalkala shetinase, va'afilu shehiniseis tamos nafsha implishtim. I will say again, so what's the case? When it comes to co-wives, so there's a natural resentment between co-wives. Why? Because one wife always feels that the other wife is infringing on her intimate life with her husband. You're taking time from my husband. Which I will say, we know. Again, lest you think that this is pettiness, the Torah records this very same thing by Rachel and Leah. So again, this is a reality of co-wives. It never worked for two women to be sharing one man. So therefore, again, I would have thought that in that case of co-wives, that's where Lemaisa, again, we have to be choshish that one woman is really lying about the fate of the husband in order to go ahead and give it to the other. However, Aval Chamosa, Ditsara Mili Da'alma, Ema Moldi Leid Rabbi Akiva. But perhaps, again, in the case of a mother-in-law, where, again, I will say, you know, a mother-in-law's damage is usually limited to words, right? She's not going to inflict any more harm than some nasty words. So the mice, again, the tsar is not as acute, and therefore maybe in that case, Rabbi Tarfon agrees with Rabbi Akiva that maybe, in fact, she's lying, and therefore again, she doesn't detruma. Vi'i itmar baha ka'am Rabbi Akiva. And if it would have just said the second case, and it would have just said the Shit Rabbi Akiva, the second case, Ava Bahach ima modile, Rabbi Tarfon, perhaps in case of Marty's modile, Rabbi Tarfon, therefore Tzricha, essentially what the Gemara says is because Lemaisa, again, both cases are different, and both cases each have their own unique aspect to it, therefore they're both necessary. Am Rabbi Yehuda Shmuel, halacha Rabbi Tarfon. So Rabbi Yehuda saying of Shmuel, the halacha follows Rabbi Tarfon, and therefore I both say in any of these cases, wife number two, who is the wife ultimately again, for whom the testimony that the husband was dead is not believed, therefore is permitted to what? Continue tichruma. Because again, I will say, Rabbi Tarfon just takes it to its logical extension. If you're not going to believe the testimony of wife number one, that the husband is dead, for wife number two purposes, that means wife number two is married. If wife number two is married, she continues to enjoy the financial benefits of being married to a Kohen, which means that she's entitled to continue to eat truma. So the Gemara says, Amra bai afana namitanina. We also learn this, nitan li ben, but Medina Sobosa is actually going to be our next Mishnah. If a woman says, we went overseas, and there was a childless couple when they went overseas, and then she says, overseas, I had a son, but then meis b'ni v'achakach bali, but then my son died, and then my husband died, ne'emenes, she is believed. I will say, now the reason she's believed in that case is because if she says, my son died, and then my husband died, she pretty much has the same chazaka now that she had when she left, which is what? That she's subject to yibum. On the other hand, ba'ali v'achakach b'ni, on the other hand, if she says what? My husband died and then my son died, which also means what? That she is not subject to Yibum. Eina ne'emenes. So in that case, again, she is not ne'emenes. V'choshishin lidvareha. And therefore, again, we are choshish for her words, for herself, but not for her tzara. Meaning, so I have to be choshish. What does it mean, choshish for her words? V'choletzes v'lo misyavemes. So mostly we have to be choshish for her words. Therefore, again, we're not sure. If she's telling the truth, if she's not telling the truth, so we leverage our risk. How do we do that? So she's subject to Yibum, but what? We won't let her do Yibum, but we'll make her do Chalitza. However, what we infer from the here is, l'dvarehu d'choshishin, we are only concerned for her words vis-a-vis the impact they have on her. Ha l'divrei tzara in choshishin, but her words do not impact the status of her tzara, the status of the co-wife. Therefore, shmamina. So, what does it mean? Therefore, that's a support of Rabbi Tarfon. Because what does Rabbi Tarfon say? Rabbi Tarfon says that when wife number one comes along and gives testimony that the husband has died, remember again, already establishing the fact that we do not accept testimony of one wife for a co-wife because there's a built-in animosity. Therefore, the testimony of the wife only impacts her, does not impact the co-wife. Therefore, the logical extension of that is if their husband was a Kohen, so wife number one is now free to remarry Kolektor Ksuva, wife number two is married to the Kohen, and therefore, she's permitted to continue to eat Truma, and that's indeed how we paskin. Chalitza only happened with wife number one. No, because it's only Lidvareha. That's the whole chap. It's only her testimony only impacts her. That's Shita Rabbi Tarfon. Says the Mishnah, Amud Beis, Kidesh Achas Mechamesh Nashin. So, also another interesting case. A man was Mekadesh, one of five women. Ve'eino yodea ezer kiddush. So, okay, look, it's a start. It's a start. He's narrowed down the pool. I know it's one of you five. I'm just not, I love you all. I'm just not exactly sure which one. Ve'eino yodea ezer kiddush. Kol achas omeres oso kiddush. Obviously, everyone is saying it was me. So what's that lacha? No sin get lachal achas v'achas. He has to give a get to every single one of these women. However, umaniach ksuva beinehen, he goes ahead and he places one ksuva in the middle of them, v'nestalik, and then he removes himself. So we'll say it's interesting. So he has to give a get. He has to give a get to each of them. Rabbi Tarfon says he's not obligated to pay a ksuva to each of them. Rather, he puts one ksuva in the middle. Puts one ksuva in the middle, and then he's mesayik. Literally, mesayik doesn't just mean he moves. Mesayik probably means he runs. Right? He runs and he leaves it to them to figure out who is going to get it. Mostly, just you should know, we do see this concept in other areas of halacha. We'll get this when we see in the babas, but we'll discuss that sometimes when you have mamon hamutal b'sofik, when you have situations of money whose ownership is unclear, you know it belongs to someone within a group, but you're not sure exactly who it is, belongs to exactly, so you're able to go ahead and leave the money and see, look, and you're able to leave. So we'll see other cases like that. That's Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Kiva says, no. So we'll say, you've seen over here, the only reason we're bringing this in now is because this, we quoted in the previous Mishnah Machlokes in Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon, and this is the same type of Machlokes. Rabbi Kiva says, no, that is not the appropriate way. That will not resolve the doubt. Ad sheyitein get uksuva l'chol achas achas. Not only do you have to give a get to each one, but what? You have to go ahead and give a ksuva to each one. You got yourself into this. You need to get yourself out of this in the appropriate way. You need to pay out. We'll say, now I understand. That's huge. That is huge. Gazal, similarly. Gazal echa michamisha. If I stole from someone, I stole from one person within a group of five. So I stole from one of these five people, but I don't remember. I'm not sure which one exactly I stole from. Kol echad omer osi gazal. Every single person says, you stole from me. So what's the halacha? What's the halacha? Maniach gzeila meneim estalik. So I place the stolen object in the middle of the five people, and I leave it to them to duke it out and to figure out who gets the object. Rabbi Tarfon, Rabbi Kiva says no. Ein zo derech motzi mide avera. Rabbi Kiva says no. That is incorrect. That will not go ahead and literally take care of your responsibility. Shalim lochol echad ve'echad. Rather, you have to repay each and every individual. Says the Gemara. Kiddush katani baal lo katani. Now what's interesting is in case number one, it's used the case of kiddushin, right, of betrothal, but did not use the case of baal, did not use the case ultimately again of where he had relations with her. So the Gemara says similarly, gazal katani, the second case, which was a case of where you stole property, however lokach lo katani, but yet It did not discuss a case of where you purchased an item, but you're not sure whom you purchased the item from. So the Gemara says, money masnisin. Whose opinion does our Mishnah reflect? Lo Tanakama, v'lo Reb Shimon Elazar. It's not the Tanakama, it's not the Reb Shimon Elazar. How do we know this? Tisanya. Reb Shimon Elazar, Reb Shimon Elazar says, Lo Nechleku, Rabbi Tarfon, of Rabbi Akiva, Al shekidish achas mechamish nashim ve'eno yodea ezo kiddush shemaniach ksuva beinehem umistalik. So we'll say in Rabbi Shimon Elazar's version, he says that Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva do not disagree in a case of where a man was mekadesh one of five women. He doesn't know which one. That what does he do? He's only obligated to place one ksuva in the middle and remove himself. So when do they argue? Aman nechleku al shebaal. The case where there is a machlokes is where he effected kiddushin through bia. Through bia. Why? Rabbi Tarfon Omer, maniach ksuva b'nei umistalik. So Rabbi Tarfon says, still even in that case of bia, all he has to do is leave one ksuva in the middle, and he's misalik, and he's able to go ahead and remove himself. On the other hand, Rabbi Kiva Omer, ad sheyashlim l'chol achas v'achos. In that case of bia, Rabbi Kiva says, no, you have to pay a ksuva to each and every one of these women. The Rabbi said, now what's interesting over here is, according to this approach, if you look at Rashi, Rashi says over here, it's in Kiddush Katani, it's the second line, Rashi says, kevan da asa b'maisa, v'gina osa b'kiddushe bia, tzarech lahotzi atzmo b'di avera v'litin l'kulam. So Rabbi Kiva says, when you did kiddushin with bia, you upped the ante. Now, again, now the fact that you don't know which woman you were Makalis Trubia is a humiliating thing for the woman. So because you have humiliated someone, you are obligated to make that humiliation correct. How? By paying each and every one of them. And obviously, I'll say in these cases, each woman is claiming it was me. That's the chap over. Each woman is claiming that it was me. So the Maisa Kana Bikiva says, because there was a Maisa Bia here, you have to pay out a ksuva to each and every one. Lo nechluku Rabbi Tafra Rabbi Akiva. So listen to this. Now, this is the Braisa. The Braisa goes out. So we'll say, in this case over here, you have Rabbi Shimon Elazar saying that Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon agree in the case of where there was, let's say, Kiddushin Bekesef. In Kiddushin Bekesef, everybody's going to agree, one get, one ksuva. The Machlokis case is in the case of Kiddushin Bebia. In that case, Rabbi Tarfon still says one ksuva, and Rabbi Kiva says no. Once there was bia, and therefore again, there's a humiliation factor over here. You have to pay a ksuva to each and every one of them. Lo nechluku Rabbi Tarfon Rabbi Akiva al shelokach mekach mechamisha bnei adam. Similarly, we'll say the Braisa goes on that Rabbi Tarfon Rabbi Akiva do not disagree on a, or I should say they agree on a situation where you purchased an item. Shalakach mecha mechamisha bnei adam, ve'eino yodea me'eza me'en lakach, and you don't know whom you purchased the item from. Now, I will say, obviously, it's not a case where what? You purchased it, but you did not yet pay. So everybody's claiming that what? Everybody's claiming that you went ahead and you bought it from me. Now, obviously, I will say, he only bought one object. So 4 out of the 5 people are lying. Well, or maybe they're just mistaken. But either way, he does not owe 5 people money. So what does he do? Both of them agree in that case. Shamaniach de mekach benehen. That he places the amount that he owes in the middle. Umistalik, and he removes himself. When do Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon argue? On a case of where he stole. Because they will say, what happens? Shem Rabbi Tarfon, maniach gzeil b'nei mistalik. So we'll say, Rabbi Tarfon says, even in a case of theft, you only owe one thing. You only owe one unit of money. Put the money in the middle and remove yourself. Rabbi Kiva says, no. Ad shi yishalim gzeil l'chol echad ve'echad. You have to go ahead and repay each and every individual. And I will say, so therefore again, umidikam Rabbi Shimon Elazar, bekidesh velakach lo pligi, michlal de tanakama savar pligi. So we'll say, see, here's what we have. In Rabbi Shimon Elazar's model, so we'll start with what we agree with. Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon will agree in what? In a case of kidesh, in a case of regular kiddushin, that's what? All you need to do is go ahead, one ksuva, and that's it. They only disagree in the case of where there was bia. If there was bia, Rabbi Kiva says ksuva for everyone. Rabbi Tarfon says still one ksuva. Both agree in the case of lakach, where you purchased, and I mean actually you purchased it from. Both agree that what? Put the money in the middle, leave. In the case of gazal, then what? Rabbi Kiva says you have to pay everyone. Rabbi Tarfon says still only one unit of money in the middle and remove yourself. The common denominator is Rabbi Kiva says essentially, whenever you've wronged someone, you have to go above and beyond to go ahead and make it right. So therefore, if you had bias kiddushin, and now you don't remember who you had bia with, you've wronged someone in a significant way, you have to go above and beyond to make that right, and therefore you pay everyone. You stole, and you don't know whom you stole from, you have to go above and beyond and make it right with everyone around you. Rabbi Tarfon says, not about making it right, it's about making the wrong party whole. All you have to do is give the money you took or to somehow pay for the ksuva, and that's it. Now, we'll say, the fact that Rabbi Shimon Elazar says that Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon do not disagree in the case of kidesh or lakach indicates that according to the Tanakhama, they do disagree. Therefore, the Gemara says money. Whose opinion is reflected in the Mishnah? E Tanakama lisne kidesh velakach. If it's the Tanakama, then let the Mishnah discuss a case of kidesh, a regular kiddushin, and lakach, and a purchase case. V'i Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, and if it's Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, then lisne ba'al v'gazal. Then you should discuss the case of where there was bia and gezal, meaning on both sides, each of them should discuss their own respective machlokes cases. To which the Gemara says, the Olam, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. In reality, again, the Mishnah reflects the opinion of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Umay Kidesh, and what's the case of Kidesh in the Mishnah? Kidesh Bebia. Oh, It's a case of Kiddushin Bebiya. And Abbas, in the case of Kiddushin Bebiya, that's Rabbi Akiva will say what? That Lamaisi, you have to pay every single one. Rabbi Tafan will only say one. And I'm sorry, my Kiddush, Kiddush Bebiya. So the Gemara says, Tana Kiddush, Lahodiacha Kochod Rabbi Akiva. And therefore, the Mishnah Jafka chooses the case of Kiddushin Bebiya to teach you the strength of Rabbi Akiva's position, namely what? That you have to pay every single woman a ksuva. Da'af agav di isura dirabanan avid. So also remember, if you are Mekadesh Umin B'Bia, so what have you done wrong? What have you done wrong? Really nothing, because technically speaking, Bia is one of the ways in which one could affect Kiddushin, but the rabbi said that they did not want a man to affect Kiddushin with Bia. It's not a good idea. So even though you've only violated a rabbinic prohibition, nevertheless, Rabbi Kiva still says you have to pay all five ksuvas and Tana Gazal, and the Mishnah taught the case of Gazal, the case of where you stole something, to teach you the strength of Rabbi Tarfon's position. The Ava Gav, the Isira de Araisa of it, because even though you violated Isira de Araisa through theft, nevertheless, Lokanis. Nevertheless, there's not a penalty because Rabbi Tarfon still says that Allah Chalamaisa what? You're only obligated to go ahead and pay one unit. And I will say, the way we pass it in these cases, now obviously there are a lot of variations in these particular cases, but at least in the case of Kiddush, it appears that in the case of Kiddush, you'd only be obligated to go out and pay one ksuva, but in the case of Gezel, where you actually stole, you would be obligated to go ahead and see, it appears, so he passed thank Rabbi Akiva, that Lemaisa, again, you would be obligated to go ahead and pay all five people. Okay, obviously, we'll get to these. This is not actually a real Yevamis case. This is much more, we'll see, like a Bav Metzia case. We'll actually see this case of Silukim Bav Metzia. But again, remember, it's only brought down here because the previous Mishnah also recorded this same type of verbiage in Lacholkis Rabbi Kiva Rabbi Tarfon. Next Mishnah. Ha'isha Shahalchi Ubalim Dinasan back to Yevamis. So a woman went overseas with her husband, and what happened? Ubna Imahem, and they went overseas with a child. So they had a child already before they went overseas. Ubasa va'amra, and she came along and she said, Meis Bali, my husband died. Va'achakach Meis Bini, and then my son died. So ne'emenes, she is believed. And Abbas, now why is she believed in that case? Because what she's telling us, in fact, just confirms the chazaka she had before she left. So before she left, she had a child, which means, again, she was not eligible for Yibum. And she's telling us now, Nebach, they both died, but my husband died first, and then my son died afterwards, which means, again, I'm not eligible for Yibum. So she has not really told us anything new about her particular status. Fine. However, again, if she says, Meis Bini, Va'achakach Meis Bali, but if she says, my son died first, and then my husband died, then Ein Ne'emenes, she is not believed, why Rabosai? Because in that case, again, she's changing her chazaka for Yibum, and that she's not going to be believed. So the Gemara says, look at Rashi. Rashi says over here, actually before we get to that Rashi says, let's just finish. However, choshen l'dvareha, but yet we are choshesh for her words, meaning on one hand, we don't want to believe her to allow her to get remarried. We'll see. Now the reason for that is, remember, because by allowing her to do Yibum, we are essentially allowing her to do something that carries with it a potential Issur D'Oraisa and is Arayos. So to allow her, based on her testimony, to do something that is a potentially biblically prohibited immorality, that we're not ready to do, but we'll be choshesh. Choshesh means we're not going to totally discount it. Therefore, what do we make her do? We tell her you can't do Yibum, but we do make her do chalitza. Nitani ben b'medinasayam. So let's say she goes overseas, they're childless when they go overseas, and she says, while I was overseas, we had a son. Va'amra meispini. But then she says, my son died, and then my husband died. Ne'emena, she's believed. Why Rabbo say? Because again, same thing, she's just confirming the chazaka she already had. She had a chazaka being childless, and now she's saying again, at the time that my husband died, I was childless, and therefore I'm subject to Yibum. That's fine, that's confirming an already existing chazaka. So the Gemara says, however, Meis Bali va'achakach Meis Bini. But if she says, my husband died, and then only afterwards my son died, Eina Ne'emenes. In that case, she's not believed. Because once that changes the Chazaka. However, Choshen L'dvarah, but we are Choshish for her words, the Cholet says, V'lo Mesi Avemes. And therefore, she does Chalitza Nat Yibum. Ni Tanli Yavam Mdina Sayam. This is another interesting case. I went overseas with my mother-in-law. Right? Not a good idea. So I went overseas with my mother-in-law. And what happened? My mother-in-law had a child while we were overseas. An eventful vacation. Right? So my mother-in-law had a child while I was overseas. So meaning, before we left overseas, I didn't have a Yavam. I didn't have a brother-in-law. Right? Didn't so meaning had my husband died childless, it would have been no yibum because he had no brothers. While we were overseas, my mother-in-law had a child. However, Amra meis bali va'achakach meis yivmi. But and if she says that what my husband died and then my brother-in-law died, or meis yivmi va'achakach meis bali, or my brother-in-law died and then my husband died. In all of these cases, ne'emena, she's believed. Why Rabbo say? Because remember, we had no knowledge of her brother-in-law before she left. And the fact that she's saying no brother-in-law now just confirms an already existing chazaka. If she and her husband went overseas, if she, her husband, and her brother-in-law went overseas, Amra meis bali v'achach yivami, she says, my husband died, and then my brother-in-law died, or yivami v'achach bali, or my brother-in-law died, and then my husband died, eina ne'emena, she is not believed. Why? She'ein ha'isha ne'emena slomar meis yivami, she'tinase, because a woman is not believed to say that her yavam died to permit her to marry into the general populace. Nor is she believed to say that her sister died in order to marry her brother-in-law. Similarly, a man is not believed to say my brother died in order that he could do yibum. Nor is he believed to say that his wife died in order to be able to marry his sister-in-law. Says the Gemara, boy, meaning Rabbi Mirav Nachman. So Rabbi said, an interesting case. Rabbi asked Rabbi Nachman, "Hamizaki get leishto b'makom yavam mahu." Rabbi said, listen to this case. Let's say a man goes ahead, and we'll see more cases like this. In Gittin. So let's say a man goes ahead and appoints a shaliach lekabbalah. A man goes ahead and appoints an agent to act on his wife's behalf in order to receive the get. So what is the halakha? And now, this is what I'll say, this is a case where there's a yavam. So let's say a man, I'll tell you where this could happen very easily. There's a case where a man is about to die, and he decides to appoint a shaliach on his wife's behalf to accept a get on her behalf, so she should be divorced. Now, why would he do this? She's about to die in 20 minutes. Why would he do this? Because he doesn't want her to fall to Yibum. So the Gemara says, what do we say? What's the halacha? Meaning, can a man appoint a shaliach on behalf of his wife to receive a get? On the one hand, maybe we could say, kevan desanyale. So perhaps if she does not like her brother-in-law, zichusula, it's a benefit for her to be a divorcee as opposed to a widow. Therefore, and there she won't fall to yibum. And you're permitted to do something objectively beneficial for a person, not in their presence. Old deal. The other possibility is kevan dizimnin derachmale, or other times. No, she likes her brother-in-law, and what chofula. Therefore, again, it will be detrimental for her to go ahead and be divorced. And you cannot do something objectively detrimental for a person without their consent or knowledge. So we'll say, so the shaila is, so essentially we're asking, does the husband have the ability to appoint the shaliach to receive the get on the wife's behalf? Amalei Tanina, we learn this. The choshesh in l'dvareha, we are choshesh for her words. V'choletzes v'lo misyavemes, and she does chalitza and does not diibum. Look at Rashi. The choshesh in l'dvareha, midiktani b'tarvay choshishin b'yitzia b'cheskas heta l'shok, uba v'echzika asma liyava mekatani choshin v'lo amr ukma chazaka v'tinase, da'avadai mishakri mishum d'rachmalei, ka'amra alma lo mecheskin ala ba'ahava, u'midiktani nami b'cheskas yotza liyava. I'm just being this quick. So what we see from the Mishnah is we're not sure about how a woman feels about her yavam. Sometimes there could be a situation where she wants to marry him. Sometimes there could be a situation where ultimately what? She does want to marry him. Therefore, again, in this case, where a husband appointed a shaliach to go ahead and receive the wife on her behalf, it's a suffic case as well. Where it's a suffic, would it work or not? So what happens if a man, same type of case, a man appoints a shaliach to mekabel a get on her behalf, in a situation where there is animosity in the marriage. This ketata, the husband and wife. What's the halacha? Kevan this like ketata behadei zuchusula. On one end, we could say because there's animosity, there's fighting in the marriage, it's a schus, it's an objective benefit for her to get divorced. And therefore, the maisa again, the shlichus works. Oh, Dilma, necha de gufa adifla. Or perhaps, again, a woman says, you know what? A woman says, some marriage is better than no marriage. It's better to go ahead and to have a warm body next to me than to have absolutely no one. Tashma, Dom Reish Lakish, Tav L'meisav Tandu, Mil L'meisav Amra. We'll see this in Kiddushin, that a woman says, it's better to be with someone, than to go ahead and to be a widow. Better, or to be alone. How does it go? If you can't be with the one you love, then love the one you're with. Right? Okay, good. So Abaye says, you can Google it. Right? So Abaye says, Dishum Shemana Gavra Kurse Becharsu Ramallah. If a woman has a husband who's as small as an ant, at least she can go ahead and pull up a chair with the other women. In other words, what the Gemara is saying over here is that being married gives a woman some level of status, even if her husband is a ant man, you know, even if her husband is is nothing, is a short little guy, right? At the end of the day, lemaise. At the end of the day, again, it is better for her to be married, to be in a relationship, because at least it gives her status and standing. Rav Papa says, let's just finish the parakah both sides. Rav Papa says, "Dinaftsa gavra tikri b'sifi bava v'tesin." Even if a husband, if he does for a living, if he combs flax, which was considered to be a very lowly profession, a woman is still happy to go ahead and sit on the front step with him, meaning that she's not embarrassed to be married to a man, ultimately, again, of very low stature and standing, because at least it's marriage. Rav Ashi says, "Tekulsa gavra lo bayit talfichi likidra." If a man has tainted lineage, a man has compromised yichus, he won't even ask her to prepare lentils. I will say the idea over here is Rashi says, Shemetz Pasul Mishpacha Talfachi Adoshim Shumach Hakal Ve'in Chisar and Kiskolchach Eino Sho'eles Mimenu Ach Yikrishmo Allah. I'm sorry. Meaning that even if a woman is married to a man with tainted lineage, she won't ask anything of him because, again, she's just happy to be in a marriage. I will say the Gemara says, Tana V'kulon Mizanos V'tolos V'balein. However, again, this actually ends off in a very interesting way. The Gemara says, but you have to be careful because very often, a woman in these kind of situations will simply use marriage as a cover to engage in illicit types of affairs. That a woman sometimes will be married to anyone in order to be able to provide coverage for some type of illicit or immoral behavior. Now, it doesn't mean, obviously, that every single woman who's married to a man of a lowly stature will go out. But the idea of the Gemara saying is the following, that sometimes women will just take any marriage over single life, because marriage, again, affords them some level of safety, security, and status. And sometimes, unfortunately, there may be those that may just take any type of marriage as it gives them the cover to engage in any type of licentious behavior they may desire. Hadron Allah, Ha'isha Shalom. Tomorrow morning, 8:15.